This is a continuing episode of a series about the Netflix production of Three Body Problem. There will be medium-level spoilers. So if that's something that bothers you, move on and find a different episode of Sci-Fi Thoughts, like maybe Foundation series.
And after this, it's all about the aftermath of that. Like, what are we going to do? We have 400 years. They can spy on us. What's our strategy, you know?
Yeah.
Wade has some interesting strategies.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to keep talking about spoilers or?
A little bit. I mean,
technically this is now book two. So that's the end of book one, episode five.
Mm-hmm.
Everything after that is starting book two. We could end the spoilers there. I just say, you know, if you haven't watched further than that, just watch it.
Yeah. I guess that works.
I will say they really rushed book one. But I think it's fine.
Rushed. I would use a different word. Rushed implies carelessness. Were they careless in book one?
Not necessarily. Oh. I understand what they're trying to do. The 10-cent version was 30 episodes for book one, and this one is 5 episodes. So that tells you how much was cut or just changed around. So I think what they're trying to do is they know book one is slow. They cut out everything that was unnecessary to get us to the Sofon reveal, because that's the big thing, right? And after that, I notice it slows down. It slows back down to like level of the book. So that has been high hopes for season two, but that they'll be much more detailed about stuff, because they drop a lot of details in the book one section. But I understand why they did it, and I actually approve of it. I think it was pretty well executed.
So instead of using the word rush, unless you mean it negatively, you could say the pacing is fast.
That's fast. Exactly. Neutral.
So did you like the movie, Mark?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I'd give it like a 8 out of 10. I think it was really well executed, really high production quality. It had all the great moments that were there, you know, everything I wanted to see. We've seen the ship cut in half.
Let's do some comparative relative measurements here. So you said it's 8 out of 10 with high production value, and I'm going like, but I'm going to do the same thing to you I did during when we did Foundation season two, as I would say, yeah, but then there's Dune. That's really high production quality.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so it's Dune, not Dune. If we can assume Dune is like 10
by 10,
and then
what's a 1?
Foundation is, I don't remember what we rated Foundation, but I'm thinking it was probably pretty close to what you already are stating for this film. So was this on par with Foundation for production value?
I think production value probably, but I might give Foundation like a 7. It has, you know, Foundation has a lot of great stuff that was added, but I think it also dropped a lot of great stuff, great concepts from that I was looking forward to. The problem is, since I read the books, it's hard for me because I'm expecting to see something a certain way. So when it's not, it's like seeing something brand new. And so I'm not necessarily immediately a fan of it, you know, but I could be. Like, there's stuff in Foundation. I really like the dawn, day, dusk stuff. That stuff is amazing. And it's all original. But then other stuff it was okay.
So you're saying, yeah, they're saying this one did better.
I think this one's a little bit better. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I can't decide that they're really close. So I'd say between 7 and 8, that sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't quibble that at all.
You recommend it?
Enjoyed it. I think anybody would enjoy it. If you read the Chinese text, the original text, you might not enjoy it, but you might. And if you read the English version of the Chinese text, you know, see, I'm building this case for everybody's reading derivative content, and that derivative content that you read, now you become fixed to it like it's canon. But there's at least multiple versions of this content out there, and I think they're all pretty good in different ways. And I haven't read seen the 10-cent version, so I can't really say, but I feel like as a viewer, this pace seemed pretty suitable to me. I was really liking it, and I like the characters, and
I recommend this one over the 10-cent or the book to anybody. it's just much more easier to access for people. Like, the pacing is much better. It's fast, but the problem with the books is they were slow, right? So it fixed the problem, actually. And if anybody ever wants more detail, then they can go read the book. But I would recommend the Netflix version before any other version.
So what's your call to action here? Go see the movie?
Yeah, I mean, if you got through the spoilers here without watching it, then go watch it.
Yeah.
Try to stick around for season two. There's going to be some crazy stuff. And if you can't wait for that, then go read the second book and maybe the third book, which is the best one.
Yeah, yeah. I have to. So if you're a cinephile, there is little bits of interesting setting that are going to be in the background as the movie flows, and especially the books. So people's bookshelves have very telling things that tell you something about that character. Another example is that a kind of a random character at the end of the film is carrying a copy of Dahlgren. So those of you who know Dahlgren, that should pique your interest, because I'm telling you, the type of people who build movies with detail put Dahlgren in the film. I thought that was really cool. A science fiction novel from the 1975. And Dahlgren's about a midwestern town. Some kind of crisis hits it and all these weird things start happening, which is exactly what would happen if a cell phone decided to conduct some kind of war on you. He'd screw up physics for you and all these weird things would happen. So I seeing that, I thought, oh my God, he just solved the question of what was Dahlgren about? It was about a cell phone.
It's part of the three-body problem universe.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I had no idea. That was a lot big setup. Yeah, so there we are. And I'm trying to think, what else did we have that was a nice little...
Yeah, I mean, speaking of books, they actually do that a lot in the series. They have a lot of these Easter eggs. So the Ye Wen Jie is also reading some books at one point. It's a book about the Fermi paradox and a book about game theory. That's a bit of foreshadowing. And then I believe Jin Chung also has a book at one point that I can't remember what it was, but
yeah,
when she's looking at the boxes.
Oh, but she had a children's book. I forgot.
Alice
in Wonderland. It's
the fairy tale books. Will Downing had the fairy tale book, which is also foreshadowing.
There's a fairly famous NASA scientist who gets a cameo in the... More than a cameo. He plays a role at the end. Yeah, his name is Bobek Ferdowski. And he's called the Mohawk guy because he has a Mohawk and he works for NASA. And he's in the systems controls room when they're launching the spacecraft to
probe.
Yeah. One of Wade's plans is to send a spacecraft to go meet them. Anyways, I'm not going to say anything more about that, but they launch it and he gets to be he does his job that he does for NASA, but he does it in the movie. So I thought it was really cool.
I didn't know it. That's great.
If you went to WesterCon in Portland, or also known as the WorldCon in Portland, I saw him in person. That's why I recognized him.
There's a lot of good details here, I think, in this series. I'll also mention, we can skip from episode 5 to the very last scene. It's one of our favorite scenes, which is Bugs scene. So when they reveal the Sophons and basically say everyone's Bugs, you know, that's supposed to be like make a sound like we're going to lose and... There's no hope.
Right.
Everything's at a low for humanity at this point. You know, we're about to be conquered. Nothing we can do. This technology can't progress. But at the end, one of the characters, Clarence, he sees it differently. You know, he takes them out and have them watch the cicadas and huge clouds of cicadas. And he basically says, like, yeah, humanity's been trying to get rid of bugs forever. And the gap between us and them is larger than the gap between us and the Santi, right? And yet we haven't been able to do it. We haven't been able to get rid of them. And all of a sudden it has that little bit of hope at the end of the series, you know?
Yeah.
Which should be a completely hopeless situation.
Yeah. No, it'd be really horrible if this happened in real life. Yeah. That's for sure. I would be kind of upset. Go read the book by... Please repeat the author's name again.
Leo Sistine.
No, the one that... The English version.
Ken Leo.
L-I-U. Is his last, how you spell his last name?
Yeah, L-I-U. They're both the author and the translator are both Leo.
I'll put links to that in the show notes.
If you invited Leo Sushin on, could you talk to him in Chinese?
Probably not. It's just my vocabulary is the friendly, like, it's just not, I can't go that deep.
there's a thing within the three body community, which nobody knows how to pronounce any of the names or anything. And I think if we did a recurring podcast, it would be nice. It would be refreshing to have people who would know, like, at least the cultural background and how to pronounce people's names. And we could also be that bridge between the Chinese community and the, if you bring in like some Chinese people related to the book, then we could be that bridge between them and the English fan base, you know? Mm-hmm. So now I feel like there's no connection between them.
No. I hear you. It's that whole language barrier.
I know.
And I know I didn't say, yeah, when, yeah, yeah, when, yeah, I didn't always get the tones,
yeah,
right.
So I don't know the tones. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you probably studied Lu Xixun. I don't know how to say his name. I didn't look it up, but you use tonal. So
C-I-X-I-N. I don't know.
No, but that's tones. Just the pinyin. I don't know.
I don't know the tones either.
I copied the actual Chinese names some of these, except for his. I didn't prep it before the show, so I missed that.
I don't know the tones off the top of my head. I just do the generic the Megoran
toneless. Tones. Yeah. Toneless, Mark. You're toneless.
The Megoran accent tones.
Well, there's irony in what you just said, by the way. Because you said Megoran without tones, and I was like, what the hell? Oh, I see. That's funny.
I haven't gotten to the point where I'm good at tones yet. That's not happening right now. So I thought I'd give you a little bit of trivia about sofans. So in Chinese, proton is jizi.
Oh, I didn't know.
And sofan is also jizi in the text. But when you read it, it's a different character. So it's the character of wisdom. So it's like wise proton.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But Ken Liu had anything he could want to choose to translate that, he chose sofan, right? And that's why we say sofan, because of him. But because it's sophisticated proton. But I saw people coming up with alternate ones he could have used. And one was like Intellitron. Smarticle.
Smarticle. Ha, ha, ha.
And my favorite is Witty Bitty.
Oh, my God. We got the pundits out. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Where are you seeing this stuff? What community are you talking about?
It's on Reddit. There's a three-body world on Reddit.
Ah, brother. Yeah. That's just a lot of pundits there. Growing up has never been easy, even in prehistoric Mesopotamia. Young Akia was the runt of a tribe that's legendary for feats of strength. But Akia prefers feats of intelligence. However, that gets him no respect from his peers. He gets into more trouble when he accidentally disrupts his tribe's corner on the market of hauling goods due to his invention of using levers. This idea becomes so popular that the neighboring tribes no longer require his own tribe's services. To make matters even worse, music television marketers from the future are meddling with the culture of the region. At first, Akia is excited by the strangers, but then realizes that there is a danger in becoming dependent on their gifts. But the strangers' pull is drawing the youth away from all of the tribes. So Akia must find a way to save his people. Join the music television marketers with their technological magic, or join with his elders who had rejected him. Caveman Funk, a novelette by Lancer Kind, is available on Amazon Kindle. This is the last episode of a series about Netflix Three Body Problem. The series started at episode 273, so if you're like my friend Bob and you missed the first episode, go back to scifithoughts.space and you can enter in the episode number or description and it will find those episodes for you. We've got the goodies, and they're in the show notes. So if you're using a podcast player, they show up right there in the user interface for easy peasy access. But hey, if you didn't use a podcast player and you downloaded the MP3 from a website, go back to the website and you will see on that page the show notes. And there you will see links to the three-body problem, some more information about Kinlio, and anything else that we could drum together, like some science background on the three-body problem, and whatever the other thing we dreamed up.